Hello, hi, and welcome to another episode of Gully Cricket to Bounce Wicket podcast. I'm your host, Srinivas.
Hello, this is Manoj.
Hi, everybody. This is Raja.
Today, we are going to be joined by our friend Naman Agarwal. For those who don't know who is Mr. Naman, he is someone who is cover driving stats to Force recently on Twitter and with the Twitter handle name of Cover Driven for Four. So he plays sub-divisional cricket in Bengal and as a proud citizen of this country, he is exercising his fundamental right of doing engineering in computer science. So, welcome to the show, Mr. Naman.
Hi, everyone. Excited to join the show.
Thank you. So, I know it, like every Indian fan is hurting now because of India's loss, and especially after what this team has done over the past few years, right? Be it especially the last two tours of England and Australia, we had our hopes high, and fortunately or unfortunately, there is, you know, about a 1.5 month or 2 months gap between deciding that India is going to play and play the finals and the finals. So the buildup of all of it and then finally not able to win the match, I'm sure it's hurting for fans. But let's see the other side as well. New Zealand is not some team who has won it randomly, right? New Zealand has toiled very long in, especially in the ICC trophies, we know, and what happened in 2019, needless to mention. So let's congratulate first of all to New Zealand, you know, for winning the inaugural ICC Test World Championship. So let's see how it all went, and let's talk about so many things that need to be discussed. So, Naman, before we start, I just want to ask you, like, you have spent so much time, or you have, you know, spent so much of your time on analyzing this game, right? Before the start of the game, right? Be it, you know, player stats or be it matchups or be it weighted batting averages. You have written multiple articles in Cricket STC and a lot more. So when the match got delayed, have you felt that you would have worked on weather charts and, you know, whatnot? Have you felt bad for not doing the weather charts?
Yeah, like absolutely. Like, while thinking about all the stuff that I could analyze, the weather thing didn't come to my mind at all. Like, and after I saw that the first entire day got washed out, I thought that I could have earned some points there.
So yeah, like New Zealand and weather is more, or I would say, better love story than Ashwin and left-handers. So you can't make them inseparable. So Raja, just talk us through what happened in the first innings. Of course, we all know the start is usual. Virat Kohli lost the toss. Yeah. So talk us through what happened in the first innings.
First of all, I think that was a decent, that was a very good introduction that you just gave. And added to that, you know, the what happened, I think this is also a new experience for all our fans as well. I think this is a different kind of hurt. It's a kind of hurt that when somebody like when some a lot of the people today follow white ball cricket, and white ball failures are, you know, you can at least share it with people and they can understand, and they can do that. Test cricket in itself is a very niche thing, and the World Test Championship final is something very different, and we've been, you know, at least I can speak for all of us, where we've been building towards it for 2 years and two years or more. So it's a different kind of hurt, and I think when we follow sports that closely, I think we go in with all our expectations, and they can take two different sides at any time. So as you said, the rain delays, you know, were another added frustration to an already difficult situation. But the play eventually started off on the second day, where Rohit and Shubman Gill got off to a very good start, I would say. Probably, you know, it could be right up there with Kohli and Rahane's partnership that happened later on as being one of the best partnerships of India across the two innings. So Rohit and Shubman negotiated brilliant bowling from Saudi Bolt, Jameson and De Grandhomme and Wagner too pretty well. And once Rohit fell in the 21st over, Shubman followed pretty soon. And there was a bit of a rebuilding that needed to be happened between Pujara and Kohli. Pujara, I think we'll talk about what happened with Pujara's form a bit more in detail as well, but he fell pretty early uncharacteristic to his reputation. And so the day ended, the second day ended at around 140, 6'3", right? So what did you guys feel like at the end of the second day? What did India's chances look like?
I thought it's all about Rahane and Kohli, and they are going to put up big partnership and they are going to, you know, steer innings to a different level. But I think what was frustrating was that there was a lot of stopgap arrangement in the previous day evening, right? Like Kohli was looking in good form and good touch, and then all these disturbance. Again, like whether you are a 90 or, you know, 10, the next day is the next fresh day, right? It's always a fresh day. So what you have seen in the previous day, the way you look at the ball, everything changes. So it's always a tricky situation. But after that, I would say no one get going. And Jadeja incidentally was dropped at 10, but he could not, you know, make runs again. And if not for, first innings, Ashwin's brilliance, I would say India would have got maybe 20 runs lesser. I think
absolutely
go on.
So New Zealand, to their credit, I think it is one of those rare performances that session after session their bowling standards improved, right? You look at any team's bowling performances, they usually at the end third day or fourth day, as the sessions will go on, their performances might dip or go a little flat. But I think having a four-pronged pace attack and having the support of Colin de Grandhomme, who wasn't giving away too many runs, making sure that his decent bowling performance kept the bowlers fresh and throughout. So we can talk about Jameson as well, how he's taken out. During the course of the match, he took out Virat Kohli twice. Right. And on route in the first innings took a wonderful 5-4, taking out the big wickets of Rohit and Pant as well, who could have changed the game. So excellent performance. And as you said, a bit of decency was added to the scoreline by Ashwin and Jadeja's batting. But as usual, again, that once that partnership fell, the tail of India hasn't wagged all that often. And I'm just looking at the, scorecard. It's just taken once Ashwin fell, it just took six overs odd to wrap up the innings. So pretty, it was a performance that could have gone to higher heights, but the kind of condition that that we were able to see at the start of day three, were you okay with 217 or runs left at the ground? What did you guys feel? Naman, you?
At the end of the second day, which was actually the first day of the match, I thought that we were in a very good position. Before the start of the game, with the conditions and New Zealand winning the toss and turning India in, I thought that we ended day two on a very good note. And I had high hopes that we would reach somewhere around 300, and that would be a safe total. But even if we had crossed 250, I think that would have been a par score on that surface in those conditions. But with 217, I'm sure it was 20 to at least 30 to 35 runs short of a par four. And which that was the kind of that was the difference at the end.
And Rahane, once again, whenever he started looking good, he'll throw away his wicket, right? That's the usual Rahane. And I don't know.
Credit to Kane Williamson for that field placement.
he has made some interesting field placements throughout the game and got instant rewards. That Rahane one and the we saw in the third innings with Shami. Was that? Fly slip, and instantly the next ball goes exactly to him.
In fact, I think Raja, you spoke about Jameson. I think we have to really give a shout out to him, the way he bowled. The way he set up Virat Kohli. Of course, it was a beautiful ball, but still, what happened one over our previous goals in that over. It, I mean, a lot of it talks about his brilliance as well, right? It came in, it came in very sharply, but still the way he has set him up was amazing.
Absolutely. I agree completely. I think his reputation is only getting better and better, right? And he's been having a dream 2020 and 2021, but 2021 to be precise, the auction having gone well and he's doing well for RCB and coming back and doing well against England and then carrying that forward into the World Test Championship. And it's been a great ride for someone who's just played 8 test matches so far.
Yeah, and before we move on to second innings, I think we have to give a shout out to Rohit and Shubman Gill as well, right? Both of them have given a wonderful start and they have nullified the toss thing. Like, at least to start with, they have nullified the toss advantage. They played, they gave only 60 runs, but I think the first wicket fell in after 20 overs, right? If your openers are saying of the first 20 overs, that's a dream start, I would say. Correct. But Manoj, talk us through what happened in the second innings and how the masterclass batting of Kane Williamson has unfolded.
Sure, Sino. So before we talk about Williamson, let's look at the openers, how it panned out the second innings. I mean, Latham and Conway opened. Conway, of course, coming on the back of a double 100 and doing well against England. They had that momentum, match practice. And they put up a partnership of 70. And the first wicket came at 34th over. So they weren't, India looked rusty with their bowling. I mean, having not bowled, in an international match after IPL, they looked rusty. They took time to get going. But then Ashwin came, took the crucial wicket of Latham. And then again, it looked like they were not getting a wicket at the fag end of the day. Conway playing a shot and then getting out. It was a nice catch by Shami as well. And then moving on, Williamson was a rock. I mean, what a solid player. He was prepared to play the waiting game, which we see very rarely in the current crop of cricketers. He was defending, and if there was a loose ball, he put away with ease. And then Ross Taylor, he also looked solid, but then he got out playing a shot, courtesy very good catch by Shubman Gill. And then Henry Nichols poked a wide one, outside off. And then what a peach of a delivery from Shami to get Watling out, right? And then D. Granholm also trapped in front using the crease by Shami. Amazing. Shami was a standard bowler for India in the second innings. And then if you look at the lower order, right? I mean, the lower order and the tailenders, they put on close to 60 runs. I mean, that was a difference for me, right? When you look at our tailenders, I think it was about, I don't know, maybe 20-30 runs. Situations like these, this could be the difference for both sides. So overall, the batting was a tad better than India, and with a good lead of 32, they were well positioned, I would say.
And talking about Williamson, Naman, you are a cricketer yourself, so you can say, can we show that as, the best defensive technique, that Williamson's batting or playing with the soft hands or how he has played? Your thoughts on his batting?
Yeah, I am not anyone to speak on his technique. Like, he is an international great. I'm just a divisional cricketer. But yeah, from my experience, people have seen, people on international stage also have different kind of techniques, and at my level where I play, I've also seen people succeeding with different kinds of techniques. We saw the comparison of Kohli's and Williamson's defensive techniques. We saw that Kohli likes to stretch out and meet the ball as close to the bowler as possible while still meeting the ball under his eye. And Williamson tries to meet the ball as close to the stumps as possible while still meeting the ball under his eye. So that is the key point, I think, that playing under your eyes and not going far away from your body. So Like Kohli also does that, and Williamson also does that. Both, but both do that in different ways. And it is surely one of the safest techniques you can see. Like you rarely see Williamson put a long stride out. Even the fuller balls, he generally puts a short stride and allows the ball to come in his box, in his imaginary box, which he creates around himself, and doesn't throw his hands away from that box. Unlike which he did when he got dismissed uncharacteristically, he poked outside, he threw his hands away and poked outside and got an edge. So yeah, obviously one of the best defensive techniques in the world, you've got to say.
So Raja, speaking of New Zealand's tail, isn't it expected actually, because we know what Jameson and Tim Southee and Wagner and these guys are capable. So I would say this is very much expected. So what are your thoughts on New Zealand still getting away probably 70, 80
absolutely.
Runs?
Absolutely agreed. I think New Zealand has that. You know, I was reading an article on Cricinfo how the 6 to 10 batsmen of New Zealand in the last 3-4 years have contributed, have had the highest batting average. So these guys are proper cricketers, like proper full proper batsmen, and you know, and there was also an something that I read that Tim Southee apparently has the most has the highest frequency for off six hitting in test cricket, much more than your reputed batsman. The next closest I think was I think it's Steve Smith or Ricky Ponting or somebody, but this is what it is like.
Yeah, he crossed Ricky Ponting during that innings, I think.
If I remember in previous episode, I mentioned that he has more sixes than AB de Villiers in test cricket.
Right. So what? It may just have been a couple of sixes, but Jameson and Southee have added. That became the difference, as what Manoj has already spoken about. It was also good bowling that took out Wagner pretty early. Otherwise, Wagner is somebody who has a good defensive technique, and he can stick around and could have been a thorn again to India's side. But it was a very good batting performance from the tail, no doubt.
Yeah, so New Zealand has got 32 runs lead, and India were entering into their most important innings of the match, right? With 32 runs, opposition leading by 32 runs. So, Naman, talk us through what happened thereafter.
Yeah, so I think it's safe to say that India started the third innings on the back foot. Like, there were 4 sessions remaining in the game, and they were 32 runs behind in a game where scoring was difficult. So, there were a couple of important things to note when the inning started. First, that the lead of 32 in the context of the game was pretty big. Like, you generally don't consider a lead of 32 to be like match defining, but you can say that it turned out to be match defining in this case. And that that cushion of 32 runs allowed New Zealand to bowl even more attacking lengths than what they bowled in the first innings. They could afford to bowl fuller and get the ball to swing more and induce more plays and misses and edges. Then we saw Krigviz posted a stat that the average length of Tim Southee's first over in India's second innings was fuller than any first over he has ever bowled in his test career.
Wow.
Like, imagine that. That shows that New Zealand also, like, they were aware of the game situation and adapted beautifully. Like, they attacked India with the ball, bowled attacking lengths. And also kudos to Shubman and Rohit again. Like, they continued their form from the first innings. They did a good job in negotiating the first few overs. Then Tim Southee weaved his magic. He got Shubman both and Rohit both with the new ace up his sleeve, the three-quarter seam ball, which seams back in. He set both of them up beautifully with away swingers, away swingers, away swingers, and then. The Shubman dismissal was a three-quarter seam ball, and the Rohit's dismissal was not a three-quarter seam. It was a straight seam ball which had the shiny side on the outside, if I'm not wrong. So and it just seamed back in. Brilliant stuff by Southee. I think that Rohit's dismissal there was one of the many turning points of the game. Like this game, I feel had many turning points, many little turning points, and Rohit's dismissal was one of the key turning points. Which if Rohit had not got out then, he got out at the score of I think 51 for 1. Like it was India were 51 for 1 when Rohit fell. So had he not got out then, had he went on to stay not out and started day 6, like India would have been in a much better position. So anyway, so India ended day 6, day 5 with a lead of 32 runs and a loss of 2 wickets. And like we all, everyone on Twitter and everywhere on like every friends group and all, we had a lot of theories going into the final day. Like how should India approach? How should New Zealand approach? And like I feel the more saner, more conservative minded people wanted they felt that there were only two results possible: New Zealand win or a draw. And the like braver and more aggressive minded people felt that India were still in it. And I'll be honest, I belong to the latter section. I still believe that there was India had a big chance if they approached it well and if they executed their approach well. So it was very interesting to see how they started off day 6. It was, I think, pretty obvious. Everyone of you, I think, would agree that Rohit and Pujara, Kohli and Pujara both came out looking very positive. Like, not necessarily, I don't think that they came out looking for a win, but they, like the shots they played, even the defensive shots which they played, there was like they had a lot of positivity in their shots and in their body language. It looked like they meant business. Like, and I feel that was the right approach too, because in those conditions, final day pitch, like day 6 pitch, and the kind of bowlers they had, like India had to make sure that they score runs, because if they didn't, like it could have ended up. If they were not positive and if they didn't have the initiative of scoring runs, like India could have ended up with an even lesser lead than what they eventually got. So I feel the approach at the start was right, but again, the genius that Kyle Jamieson is, like he can't do anything wrong in Test cricket at the moment. First innings he set Kohli up with away swing, and then got one to nip back in. This time he did the opposite. Like if you notice, the first half an hour, both Saudi and Jamieson were targeting the stumps a lot. Both of them were getting the ball to come back in, swing in or seam in. And then Jamieson suddenly threw one out, which nipped back, it nipped away. It slightly nipped away or straightened a bit. And Kohli, in his positivity, in the frame of mind that he was looking to play at most deliveries, just fished his bat out and nicked one. And same for Pujara. Like that was a brilliant ball, and like, Pujara was in two minds, I think, to play or to leave, and got an edge. So that was a crucial first hour New Zealand won, I think. And that also benefit, I won't say it benefited, but it did one thing good for India, I'd say. The loss of Kohli and Pujara's wicket was that till they were there, I think they would have been a little bit confused as to what, like how to approach and how to go about their innings, how to set up their innings, how to pace their innings. But after their wickets, like there would have been clarity, because with Kohli, Pujara, with the top four batsmen out, like you can't expect the like bottom seven batsmen to hang around and play 50-60 overs of that kind of bowling against in those conditions. So I think those two wickets gave India a little bit clarity as to how to go about their innings, which was to score runs and go for the win. Because at that point, like there was no point going for the draw, I felt. Because if they did, they'd eventually bundle up inside a lead of 100. So you want to pitch in, Srini?
I just want to say Pujara, Kohli and Rahane, I think all three of them got out to a different balls, but the basic reason behind getting out is indecisiveness, right? They haven't decided whether to play it or not. Even I mentioned some time back, Rahane in the first innings also, he just started looking good and then he'll throw away his wicket. So this is such a high profile match, and it's when Rahane was there with Pujara and Kohli in the hut, it was his responsibility to take the innings deep, right? to stay there and score minimum 2-3 runs an over and, you know, consume those overs, right? It's a double-edged sword. So he can consume those overs and score a bit. So obviously, like, target will increase for New Zealand at the same time with less number of overs. But I think it's a very big mistake by Rahane there. And yeah, after that, again, Pant, you cannot like blame him, right? That's the way he plays. So that's the way he won his matches and series. So, and he contributed 40. So when the big guns have failed, he contributed 40 runs. So we have to look at that way. But yes, he himself will be upset with the way he got out. But yeah, I think what are your thoughts on Pant getting out in that way?
I don't have any issues at all with the way he got out, because like that is his game, that game of his got him to 40 in that innings, and he was the highest scorer in that innings. That game of his has given India GABA, it has given India Sydney, it has given India Ahmedabad. Like, India have tried changing his game and we have almost lost him. Like, for a year and a half, his form was like totally gone. So even you can say that there is one point that in that crucial stage, maybe he could have taken a bit more time and not played that kind of a shot. You can say that, like, maybe even Pant might decide to play a different shot in that, at that moment in hindsight. But I won't question his approach at all, because as I said, that is his game, and that game of his could have won India the World Test Championship as well, had he continued for even say 5 or 10 more overs. So no question, no issues with his mode of dismissal at all.
I think Ravi Shastri, at the end of day 4, he would have sat with Shami and hypnotized him, saying tomorrow is day 5, right? He bowled beautifully on day 5, and even on day 6, he batted well. I mean, those 13 runs, we never know. Like, let's imagine the match has come to a draw or winning stage. Those 13 would have been invaluable runs. Right now, they may seem, you know, I mean, a small contribution in the overall scorecard. But those 13 runs were amazing. And I think more than Pant, he played his natural game. Shami, if you ask me, he never, you know, try to stay there. He just want to come and hit some runs and go there. So Raja, your thoughts on New Zealand's disciplined bowling? How disciplined are they, man? How, I mean, I don't know. Your thoughts on New Zealand's bowling?
Incredible. So what I was mentioning in what happened in the first innings as well, right? You had India batting for 92 overs, correct? And in the first hour, that was probably when the New Zealand attack was at their weakest. And that's when, you know, they were not as incisive or with their lengths and lines and all that. That's when they brought in Colin de Grandhomme to arrest the flow of runs and bring some sense of discipline into the lineup, just to get control back. That's what Kane did. Now in the second innings, if you look at it, he was not used. Now you had four tearaway fast bowlers, you know, like brilliant fast bowlers, different strengths. You have your left arm swing in Bolt, you have your right arm swing in Saudi, you have your tall, you know, whatever Jameson is doing is gold. And then you have your battering ram that Neil Wagner is. He keeps going and going and going. And, you know, like you look at Neil Wagner just when he's bowling, and you wouldn't look at him like he was a New Zealander. He seems so angry and focused and determined.
He needs wicket on every ball.
Yeah, he wants to rip the head out of the batsman. He looks like that. And, you know, he was going full steam, and very rarely were there any loose deliveries. Where the run scoring got extremely difficult. You look at how Pant got his runs as well, right? There were a lot of flashes that went above the slips. There were a lot of edges which ran away. Right. So, and imagine if Saudi had caught Pant at whenever that was, what difference it would have made to the whole scoring in itself. And the point is that you look at India's batting scorecard as well. India lost Kohli at 71. That was the third wicket to fall. And immediately, you know, 72 and the 70 at 72, India lost Pujara. So within a span of one run, they lost two wickets. And say look at what you know, Pant fell at 156 and Ashwin fell at 156. Now what that is telling is that there is so much discipline, right? At the same, they're not, because you've gotten a wicket, they're not looking at, you know, taking you know, going back to the this thing where you try to like take the foot off the pedal. You have bowlers from both ends bowling at their finest and their fiercest, and the pressure was endless to right from the ball one to the end of the innings. And it's you could look at it in a different way, that both the times that India batted, they were severely affected by rain. Right, both the times there were start-stop delays. India had to wait a whole day to get, you know, Kohli and Rahane had to wait a whole day to get batting on. And arguably, the first session of all the days have been difficult. India collapsed in the first innings on the first session, you could say. The same thing that New Zealand did later on, that was also in the first session. And India had to bat a very tough first session again. So there was a bit of misfortune that went India's way, but no credit, that we could, not even an inch of credit could be taken away from New Zealanders, how they bowled.
Yeah, definitely, Raja. I think, in fact, New Zealand got two wickets two times in the same over, right? Like, yeah. In the end, I mean, if I'm correct, Pant and Ashwin got out in the same over. Similarly, again, last two wickets or so came in the same over. So, amazing, right? Their bowling discipline was amazing, and India could put up a lead of 138. So Manoj, what were you thinking when India gave target as 139? So you had you thought India had a chance, or what were you thinking?
I really think India had a chance if they had taken a couple of early wickets and put pressure on them, but Williamson and Ross Taylor had other ideas. I mean, they were rock solid. They were prepared to play the waiting game. I think the idea must have been, let's stick around, the runs will come, we have the whole day to us to get these 139 runs. So they prepared, waited, defended, or the odd ball, they scored runs. So I think India was in with a chance if they had taken early wickets and put pressure on them. But then I thought it was New Zealand's game when they gave a target of 139. Yeah.
In fact, New Zealand must be knowing weather is very much clear, right? If there is a threat to weather, they have to hurry up and they have to finish the innings. But we all know that there are enough overs, and only way that New Zealand can draw or lose the match is if they get hurried and try to score runs. I think. Even their opening batsmen are Ross Taylor and Kane Williamson really showed why they are premium batsmen for New Zealand. And speaking of India's bowling, look at that Ashwin's bowling, man. I mean, I don't know, like, you can say a spinner as a go-to bowler in India, but with his talent and with his brains, he has become a go-to bowler in England as well, which is least expected from a spinner, right? So, Naman, your thoughts on Ashwin's bowling?
Like, as you said, like, as a spinner, you are expected to be a go-to bowler in the subcontinental conditions. But like in SENA countries, you don't expect a spinner to be a frontline wicket-taking option, at least in the first innings, you can say. But Ashwin, I think, like, Ashwin is a legend. Like, he has gone to a different level in the last 2-3 years. The first cycle of his overseas tour, he didn't have much success. Like, he had to work hard, and like, he'd bowl a lot of overs, give away a few runs, but not take many wickets. But that has changed, like, completely over in the last cycle, you can say, in the last overseas cycle. Like, I feel that, like, he has the chance to end up as India's greatest bowler ever. Like, even above Anil Kumble, he can end up, not in terms of numbers, in terms of quality. So I feel India have to, like, look after him very well, make sure that he plays for another 3-4 years at least. Like, India have to get the most out of him. He can be the best off spinner in the world after Muthaiah Muralidharan.
Definitely. I think with his brain, he is going to go, leaps and bounds, and he's already a legend. Few people may not agree he is a goat already, but still, I think he has proved to enough people his worth, at least by taking two wickets in those second innings, right? Even on the dangerous pitch or when pitch has something, when the climate has something, when your fast bowlers are not taking wickets, he came in and he took those wickets, right? So that's the greatness of Ravichandra Ashwin. And I'm just looking at a stat by Cricbuzz. So India batting third innings of a test since January 2020. So this happened probably 5 times, and out of the 5 times, in the third innings, 4 times India scored less than 200, and all the 4 times India lost the match. So third innings has been such a crucial innings, I mean, definitely for many years now, and India scoring only 170 runs here has been one of the biggest turning points. So do you guys think this is where the whole game went away from India's hands? What do you think, Manoj?
I think the key was to bat well. At least the first innings get a score of 300 to put the opposition on the back foot, but that didn't happen. They were too fishy outside off stump, and they didn't apply themselves well. I mean, batting would be the difference here for India. If they had batted well, obviously, if they would have given a target of 200 or more, I don't think New Zealand, I mean, it could have forced a draw, or it would have made New Zealand play quickly, and it would have put pressure on them. So I think batting was the key factor here for me, at least.
So Raja, what do you think? Where India lost this match, or like, do we have 2-3 places where India would have done better and then they have lost?
I think there are a couple of. I think the batting aspect of it definitely is where India lost the plot a bit. In terms of application, there are reasons for that we didn't get enough match practice, and we will get into it, I suppose, later on what India could have done better. Once the IPL was curtailed, it was a blessing of sorts in terms of this. It wasn't the right circumstances, definitely, but having gone there a little earlier, maybe playing a bit of a tour game or something like that, that would have added, that would have calmed their nerves a little bit, whoever was batting out, right? The reputed people out there were able to survive, but the new ones and all that, because you look at when India played in England last, you look at it, if you wanted a two full-fledged test series, it was way back in 2018, right? And after that, it was the World Cup in 2019, which a lot of these players are not a part of that lineup. You have your odd Pujaras playing county in 2019 when he wasn't playing the IPL. Rahane also played a bit, but that is still a couple of years down the line. And even when we had that was a bit of a surprising element that India could have changed. The other important factor that I felt could have brought things in a little bit was Bumrah, especially in the first innings. He did brilliantly in the second. He was unfortunate to miss out on a couple of wickets. But I think we were also talking about it offline quite a bit, that had Bumrah bowled to his potential and pulled things back, because Shami was brilliant on one side, and Ishant, he's been a total workhorse, and he was excellent. He was not giving away too much, and if Bumrah had pressed forward a little bit more and done justice to his immense talent, I think the lead in the first innings would have been far lesser, probably. Maybe these two elements are what I think. People can talk about match selections and all that, but you look at what we don't have a seam bowling all rounder. So the best all rounder that we have, you could if you look at it match per on a man to man basis, you look at what Colin de Grandhomme did and what Ravindra Jadeja did. Jadeja scored more than Colin de Grandhomme and bowled better, arguably, than de Grandhomme by picking up the odd wickets and getting this thing. So I think it was not a selection issue, because India put forward the best team that they could. It's just the application of the batting, as well as Bumrah possibly will be a lot largely disappointed by his performance.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, speaking of selections, there was never a doubt in anyone's mind about selecting Bumrah, right? We all have discussed whether Shami will be dropped for Siraj, or Ishant will be dropped for Siraj. But I don't think there is one person in this world who discussed about, you know, dropping Bumrah and bringing in some other bowler. In fact, I think a day before the WTC final start, there was a Twitter space I have joined, and Mr. Dodda Ganesh, if you know, like, he's a Karnataka player, then he played for India as well. So I have personally asked him, like, who do you think is the key for this Indian bowling unit? He said Bumrah. And he himself played county cricket for 8 years in England. So I thought, I mean, his decision has so much value, right? Like, his reading will have so much value because he has seen those conditions closer than anyone else. And then he nominated Bumrah as the key bowler. And Bumrah not getting a single wicket in both innings. And in second innings, even if you see, if he bowls, runs kept coming for New Zealand. So it's quite unfortunate for Bumrah. Naman, your thoughts on Bumrah and beat Jadeja? And have you expected a little more in terms of scoring runs from Jadeja, especially considering his form and, you know, him coming in place of probably Vihari?
Yeah, so like, completely agreed on the point which you made that no one would have questioned Bumrah's place in the 11. And as for Jadeja, like, his approach in the first inning was a little like confusing as a viewer. Like, he was batting with the tail, but he allowed the tail to get the strike on the first or second ball of the over, which could have been probably, he could have probably done a bit differently. Because you see, the last three wickets, I think, and like, fell at the same score for India. Like, last three wickets fell in a space of five or six balls. So that could have, like, it wouldn't have happened had Jadeja been palming the strike. So like, scoring runs, I think Jadeja looked like enough comfortable in his defense. It didn't look like flustered, like playing and missing a lot, not having an idea as to what's happening. But I think it's down to game awareness and what to do in what situation, more than the technicality. Like, he over the last few years, he has improved a lot as a batsman. I had written a piece on like the numbers of Indian batsmen against different types of bowlers, and I found that Jadeja has no particular weakness. Like, the lowest average he has is against, I think, left arm medium pacers, which is 29, which is not really like very low. If you see, like, if the lowest average is 29, it shows that there is no particular weakness that he can't face extreme pace or he can't face left arm pace, anything like that. So it shows that he has all the like potential and all the ability, just that he probably needs to work on the game awareness and what to do in what situations. Because that, had he palmed the strike in the first innings and had he looked a bit more proactive, like, even with the non-contribution of India's tail, I feel India could have easily added 15-20 more runs.
Definitely, I think, another 15-20 runs, like we spoke a few minutes back, would have made the whole, big difference to the match. But okay, like, nothing can be done and we are speaking on hindsight. So, Manoj, who impressed you most in this game other than this Apple privacy ad and Dinesh Karthik commentary and Winston?
It has to be Kylie Jameson, without a doubt. For the way he's bowled, amazing piece of bowling that I've seen in the past, I think, 3-4 years. He's been the most impressive. I mean, getting the big fish like Kohli out could be match turning, and he has done it twice, and kudos to him, more power to him. Apart from Kylie Jameson, I would say Shami was the pick of the bowlers for India. He has to be, from Indian team, he has to be the one who's impressed me the most with his seam bowling.
As usual, India lost a high-profile match, and, you know, people are writing all over internet that Bharat Arun has to be dropped as a bowling coach and Vikram Rathore has to be dropped as a batting coach. And I think these things don't make sense, right? Because Bharat Arun has been pillar of this bowling unit in the last 2-3 years, and he has been doing a great job. I think this complete crop of fast bowling are you know, someone who made you know, impression in the international level under him. So I think he has a very good experience. He worked at NCA as well, and beat Vikram Rathor also. Like how they have set up, you know, you say Australian batsmen in Australia, right? So I don't think you know, it's problem about coaching staff or players mostly. I would say BCCI is whom has to be blamed here, because of not giving enough time for players to get ready before the high profile match starts. So Raja, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, as I spoke about it a little on the earlier part as well. Yeah, I agree. I think, you see, when you look at the whole cycle, right, when it started out in 2019 or something, if you, you know, if you said that India would have, would be topping the charts and, you know, performing so dominantly and the players would be in such great role and all that, you would take it at any day. So having had the, you know, arguably we are the best all-condition squad. I think we should give credit to that. Having the strength of that, this thing, and you not using the opportunity of this event to just give them the best possible preparation is something that BCCI, I think that it's the what the administration has to look at. I know that a lot of this young crop of Indian players, they're very gung-ho. Like they are very dumb. They are very they have the confidence to take on every adversity there is. But you know, when someone is swinging the ball at that kind of pace, and you know, when the conditions are overcast and all that, you still need that game time. There is no substitute to that. No amount of net practices or intra squad games will give you that. I think that's where they've missed the bus a little bit.
Yeah, definitely, Raj. I think one more tour game would have made it better. And in fact, one thing I don't understand is IPL got cancelled on 8th of May, right? Or 4th of May or whatever, first week of May, basically IPL got cancelled. And I don't know why Indian team haven't arrived England till 3rd of June. So I couldn't understand that. Earlier IPL was there. That's a separate subject and topic for another day, like why IPL is coming in between. So, but when IPL is not there, definitely I feel India would have reached there probably 10 days earlier to what they have reached now, and especially knowing New Zealand is going to play two test matches with England, and you know, already they are a little ahead. So Naman, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, first of all, I don't think that any, like, you, there is no scope to blame any player or any, like, part, anybody from the team, because, like, instead, if anything, we should be proud of the team for what they have done over the last few years. Like, winning in Australia, like our short-term memory as cricket fans is, like, really amazing, because we just lost the final yesterday and we forgot the, like, 6 months back we were hailing that win as the greatest win ever in Indian cricket history. So we nothing, like, can't blame any player, any coach, anybody. If also, like, I feel that I won't go as far as saying that you can blame the BCCI, because yeah, the points which you made are fair, that the IPL got cancelled midway and they could have reached England earlier. But like, the reason why IPL got cancelled was the surging second wave of the pandemic in India. And to change the arrangements which have been made in that situation, like I'm sure the hotels and the flights and everything would have been booked earlier, like way earlier before or in between the IPL for the WTC. So as the IPL got cancelled, to change all the like travel plans would have been difficult. Like, I don't know, like, actually how difficult it would have been, but I'm assuming it must have been difficult. Like, trying to play the devil's advocate here, because I'm all of you guys, like, have said that county matches probably could have been arranged and they could have reached earlier. Sure, they could have. But I'm trying to think that how, like would it have been possible? Because, like, I think it would have been difficult. Like, maybe they could have reached a week earlier, but to say that they could have reached 10, 15 days earlier, I feel logistically it would have been a nightmare. So, yeah.
No, I think you made a fair point there in favor of BCCI, Naman, because right, like you rightly pointed out, in between, among all these COVID things, definitely there would have been some logistical issue in terms of booking a hotels or travel plan or whatever. But again, it all comes down to schedule of the IPL, isn't it? Like, why in the first place IPL was, you know, ending at 28th, and it's never ending topic. But again, India has very high profile series in another 6 weeks, and like England is one place probably for this team, at least I think in last 15 years, the place to conquer, right? Even Australia 2018, we won, and again, we won 6 months back. So, but again, England is one country where this team badly want to prove, and let's hope, you know, India is going to make use of these 6 weeks there. Because especially players like Pujara, who has played some country cricket and who is only a white ball specialist for India, not having good numbers in England is definitely not a good sign there. Because if you see his batting average in Australia, it's 47. At the same time, if you see his batting average in England, it's 28. And someone with 28 batting average playing as a backbone for your team is definitely not a good sign. But I hope, you know, 6 weeks is a very good time for them to get prepared for the high-profile series in England. So let's all hope, you know, at least next cycle, like this cycle, will start on a winning note. And, you know, God knows, like, where is next WTC cycle finals is going to be played. And let's hope India will reach and win for the second time.
Just to add to this, I have a few thoughts on what India, you know, could do. I wanted to get your inputs as well. You know, in the next cycle, wherever that is, I think one or two areas that I think we should look at is the, you know, building a base of more fast bowlers with a different kind of variety. Like, if you look at our bowling lineup right now, barring Bhuvneshwar Kumar, who's an out-and-out swing bowler, you don't have an out and out swing bowler as such. We have not given Deepak Chahar or someone like that the opportunity to play red ball cricket for India. You also don't have a left arm fast bowler. You know, when Angles play such such a key role, like you have on one side, this was very evident this time around when Bolt and Wagner were both utilizing the Angles pretty well, and we couldn't take advantage of that. So, and after Zaheer Khan left, we don't have an out and out left arm pace bowler. So, I think these are a couple of issues that will crop up whenever. If you want to build a good all condition squad, I think these are something that you look at, build more, you know, more alternatives and different options.
So I think definitely, Raja, I think at least with the kind of resources or player reserves that India have now, I think it's definitely possible to do, and I think they are going to look into it. So let's hope, you know, India is going to have good season of cricket in English summer. And in between, we have India white ball team playing against Sri Lanka. And I think there is no end for cricket now. It has started. In between, we got some gap. Even our podcast got some gap in between. So I think there is no stopping now. Sri Lanka series, England series continued by IPL, World Cup. And then incidentally, New Zealand is also coming to India within this year. So it will be interesting to see, and India will be determined to, you know, win those points and win against New Zealand. So I think we have covered a lot of ground here, because India losing a high profile match, and it's never ending topic. We can keep talking on it, but I think we have covered a fair ground here. So that's all for the episode, guys. Thanks for tuning in. Stay tuned for more such interesting episodes. Stay safe, stay healthy. Bye-bye.